Back into another episode of the Dacked on Draft podcast. Again, I'm your co-host, Corey Kinnon, alongside James Foster here. Today, we are going to do another edition of Dafter Draft. So we've got some hot takes flying around, ready to roll. And I'm ready to dive in. This is always a really fun episode to get some hot takes off and decide whether or not we actually think they're that hot or if we're buying or selling them. So we've got six ones today. I think we got six pretty good ones too, James, here. So are you ready to roll through these?
Yeah, I love the format of being able to say hot takes without being tied to them or held to them in the future.
Yeah, it's great. It's great. There's absolutely no responsibility for being completely outlandish sometimes. You know, it's great. All right, let's dive in. Let's start with the wide receiver conversation here. I wrote up my seven up this week. I've been doing it every week. Seven players who I think their stock is on the rise. And I mentioned Omar Cooper this week, the wide receiver from Indiana. And I've mentioned him on the podcast a few times. So first after draft here, and again, another purpose of this is to like maybe challenge the mind of consensus or people who really only consume consensus big boards, consensus content. And Elijah Surratt is consensus, typically one of the top 10 receivers in the country.
Elijah Surratt is consensus number 78.
Yeah.
The other person is consensus 634.
There we go. Yeah. So we're going to challenge us a little bit here. Dafter draft, James, Omar Cooper Jr. gets drafted before Elijah Surratt.
Absolutely a draft. And it's like the only reason that this is a Dafter draft, I think, is because it goes against the consensus. I think in reality, I feel like unless there's some injury concern or something, you know, Cooper, I feel like will comfortably have better grades. To me, you know, Surratt is a killer, like on those slant routes. He had two touchdowns or two big plays against Illinois on slants. I just think Cooper's a much better athlete, a much more dynamic route runner. So productive after the catch. And yeah, I would definitely agree with Cooper over Surratt. I have Surratt with a mid fifth round grade, 134 on my board. And then I have Cooper with an early fourth round grade, 85 on my board, but that isn't updated since last weekend. He'll probably be on the rise.
Yeah. So what this comes down to me is philosophy of what kind of wide receivers are getting drafted and what kind of wide receivers are winning at the NFL level. And unless you're Tetero McMillan with just outrageous body control, outrageous ability to flip anything out of the air, like if you're not a good separator, even if you're a big body, you don't tend to have a lot of success. And again, there's a lot more nuance to that with the Tetero McMillan thing that I just said. But I don't know if Elijah Surratt has those kind of other difference makers to overcome being just an average athlete and probably a slightly below average separator. I mean, you have the tracking data. I'd be interested to see kind of where Surratt and Cooper stand in terms of like their explosives, because Cooper looks a lot more explosive on tape. And then what I come back to is also like third, fourth round is where teams start to draft role players. Mm-hmm. And a slot receiver is a big time role player at the NFL level. And again, we talked about this, I think it was yesterday or 2 days ago about, I would have had to end yesterday because this is just our second episode of the week. But we talk about a lot. No, it's our third. What am I talking about? Jeez, I'm all screwed up. But what we talked about was like slot receivers have to be able to play through contact. And Omar Cooper is one of the most physical receivers in college football. In my like pound for pound, most physical receivers in college football. He's not afraid to go over the middle and take on a safety coming downhill in a robber look. He's not afraid to work through contact after the catch and churn out extra yards. And so that's where I say like some team is going to fall in love with this guy is like that number three, number four wide receiver in their offense and say like, that's worth a top 100 to top 125 pick. I'd be interested to see what his explosives are because I'm not sure he's like overly explosive long speed wise, but like, again, third and gotta have it. Like he's gonna get it. So like, that's a player, man. That's a football player.
So I do it by like, I do speed scores and acceleration scores that kind of combine all of the metrics and weight them based on what I think is most translatable. I've got Cooper with a speed score of 86.5, acceleration score of 61. And then Elijah Surratt with a speed score of 32, acceleration score of 69.5. The one caveat with that is sometimes receivers that go in motion a lot pre-snap instead of like exploding off the line of scrimmage, they're going to have a little bit, they're just like accelerating if, you know, max get off like less frequently. But yeah, I think Cooper is definitely a more dynamic athlete.
Yeah. So I'm gonna draft this too, man. I hope people start getting on the Omar Cooper train because like he's scoring in a bunch of different ways. Like, yes, he's catching screen passes, but like that screen pass he cut along the boundary this past weekend, he fought through two defenders to get in the end zone on that football, on that one. He's taking jet passes 70 yards to the house and like lower level competition games. And then, I mean, his most impressive catch kit was his first one against Illinois, where he broke four tackles on a crosser, caught a crosser and broke four tackles and churned out a ton of yards after contact. So this is it's just a football player. Like,
set up, you know, set up the skinny post, did a good job setting up the break and separating. So yeah. And then broke the four tackles.
Yeah. Yeah. So I love Omar Cooper at this point. Like, he's going to be one of my guys. And like, when I say like, I love a player or he's one of my guys, that's not saying I'm putting a first round grade on him, but relative to value, the position he plays and how he plays the position. Like, yeah, I'm all about Omar Cooper right now. All about Omar Cooper right now.
Yep. And I mean, I think pretty soon that'll be a consensus opinion. Like, him being 634 on the consensus board basically means like he had a low Blesto grade or something, and that's it. Mm-hmm. So I think once more people get eyes on him, they will start to catch up.
Yeah, for sure. Moving on, our second Dafter draft. And this is another player that we've talked a lot about on this podcast early in the season so far, and not in the most positive of light. But Dafter draft, James, Alabama offensive tackle Caden Proctor won't even be a drafted player in the 2026 NFL draft.
Yeah, this is another pretty easy draft for me. You know, I think that there have been two power four opponents that he's faced, and I think they've been bad performances in both cases. So yeah, definitely somebody that I think is going to use their next final year of eligibility.
Yeah. I mean, I'm right there as well. And like, I'm pretty concerned about his weight, man. Like, he's definitely bigger than he was last year. Like, significantly at that. Like, it's noticeable.
Yeah.
And so, like, what is going on? Does he transfer back to Iowa after this year for like a second time? Like, does he have to get out of Bama and get a change of scenery? And this is, again, the Dafter draft premise here isn't that he's not going to get drafted this year. Well, it is, but like, not that he's going to be undrafted, but that.
Yeah,
he's gonna go back to school because like his resume right now is awful. He's got Georgia this weekend, so like that could sway some things, but it's just not pretty. And we're getting to the point now where it's like, what does staying at Bama another year do for you? And it's getting to the point though, well, maybe not so much because it's not the Saban era. I was gonna say, like, it's to the point though, like, if you're not locked in at Bama, are you gonna be locked in somewhere else? But like, it's been pretty widely reported that like the level of not level of commitment, but like the war room atmosphere is definitely much different under DeBoer than it was under Saban.
Right.
So maybe that is true, that if he could go somewhere else and find a way to lock in and change up some, whatever's going on. But yeah, I'm going to draft this too. I'm going to say he's at this point, like, he's not declaring for the 2026 NFL draft. Like, that's the point we're at.
Yeah. He's got like four or five straight games of, I would say, undraftable tape. So, yeah, going to need to return to school, I think.
Yeah. All right. Daft or draft number three here. Daft or draft, only one tight end goes top 70. And this is from our buddy Sam Teets. If you're not following Sam, you're doing it wrong as well. Again, I crowdsourced this one through my Discord channel. I've talked a lot about it. You know how to get in by now. But only one tight end goes top 70, James, after draft.
So the one thing that is keeping me from potentially drafting it is that I haven't checked in on Justin Jolie this year. And yeah, it looks like he's been doing okay. So I would need to watch his tape because like I've got him at 86. Kenyon Sadiq, you know, I think is obviously the implied person that would be going here. My next ranked tight end would be John Michael Gillenborg, and he has not really produced this year. Yeah. So, yeah, I would say that I draft this because, I mean, Max Clair, like I've already got him. He's at 150 for me, 33 on the consensus board, but that's kind of just a holdover from preseason. So,
yeah, this tight end class has been really disappointing, man. I understand why my John Michael Gillenborg wanted to stay at Wyoming and see it through, but that he should have gone somewhere that would have thrown him the football.
Did he even? I don't think he played against Colorado, did he?
I don't think so. No, didn't register a stat at least. So
I was gonna check out that game, but I didn't see him.
He has like one game of production. This season of consistent production. I will say the one thing with the tight end position in particular, as opposed to every other position, is that like a draft stock of a tight end is so dependent on testing numbers as well.
Yeah.
So like, I mean, Tip Ryman at Illinois didn't produce at all, and he went to the combine and lit it up, and then he went third round. But that again, that was top 100. That wasn't top 70. That was top 100. We're saying top 70. So here's another question for you. What does John Michael Gillenborg tearing up the Mountain West change your mind about him at this point? Or were you hoping that like he needs to produce against the bigger schools and kind of carry this Wyoming offense? Or if he goes into Mountain West play and then tears it up like we expected him to, kind of how do you weigh that?
Yeah, I mean, I was hoping for production against the bigger schools, you know, tear it up against the lesser competition like he's already has done. And then I was wanting to see just kind of some signs of life as a run blocker because, you know, I'm not expecting him to be this outstanding blocker or anything, but it felt like he wasn't really, he didn't really embrace contact from what I've seen so far.
Yeah. That's disappointing too, because I talked to him over the summer and he's like, yeah, it wasn't really a blocker because like we had tight ends on the roster who were, right. I was just an F and I was just like a move piece. He's like, now I am the inline. I am the tight end one. So, but we'll see what happens in Mountain West play. Again, he's one of those rare athletes.
Yeah.
Really short arms for his frame, which is interesting, but he is a rare athlete, basketball player, and it shows on tape. So, we'll see what happens, but I mean, I'm going to draft this too because outside of Claire and Gillenborg, like I liked Matthew Hibner out of SMU coming into the season, but he hasn't really produced either the way that I thought he would because they moved RJ Maryland to more of like an F and honestly a receiver, but like Matthew Hibner hasn't really produced. Oscar Delp has 3 catches in 3 games. And I liked Delp's tape last year. Like when I got under the hood, it was like, oh, he can accelerate off the line of scrimmage. He moves really well, but like he's not producing. So it's tough. So I'm going to draft it too, man, at this point, like maybe early third round, a second one comes off the board. But I think Max Clair is definitely the most disappointing one out of the whole group though. Like what he put on tape at Purdue, like there's no reason it shouldn't have translated.
Yeah, I mean,
Texas tape isn't even good on targets. He was getting targets and he wasn't good.
No. I would put Terrence Carter Jr. Out of Texas Tech potentially in that mix. But yeah, I think overall I would draft this.
Yeah. He's a fun player. I worried that, you know, he's one of those like 6'2", 240 tight ends, like a Chigo Conquo kind of like player. Yeah. But I do like Terrence Carter too. All right, moving on to daft or draft number 4. This is probably my favorite question of that we have here. Daft or draft, James. By the end of the weekend, Alabama quarterback Ty Simpson and Oregon quarterback Dante Moore will leave the weekend as consensus top 15 picks in the 2026 NFL draft.
So there's really, this is a hard one to quantify because I, if we're talking about the actual consensus board, then this would be an obvious daft, because Ty Simpson is, I think, like 418 on the consensus board. Dante Moore is 159. So yeah, I don't think that's going to happen. If we're saying in like in the minds of people like us, I would still daft it. I think like people are still going to be a little bit hesitant on Ty Simpson. I mean, I would be okay with either of them top 15 if they have great performances this week.
Yeah. I was more like thinking in the terms of like, yeah, people like us, like
yeah,
people who create draft content year round will start to see him as a top team pick. We'll see both of them as top 15 picks. I will probably see both of them as top 15 picks if they tear it up. But the hard part about this is I'm saying they will leave the weekend. So I'm saying Ty Simpson will look like a top quarterback against the Georgia defense, and Dante Moore will look like a top quarterback against the Penn State defense as well. So that adds another element to this too. But Tennessee really pulled apart that Georgia defense.
Yeah, that's so the Georgia defense is less daunting than maybe traditionally.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. They don't really have impact players on the edge, I feel like.
Yeah, and I mean, I like AJ Harris at Penn State at corner, and they have a good secondary.
I love the Key Wheelie.
Yeah, they've got a good secondary, so it'll be a real test for Dante Moore.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just so like I'm banking on that. His process has been so clean. Like now we're gonna see some Jim Knowles stuff thrown at him. Now we're gonna see like legitimate NFL talent and NFL speed, because Penn State always has one of one athletes thrown at him. So like,
right.
How does his eyes and how does his process adjust to that? I think the kid has been brilliant on tape so far. And I'm really hoping that translates. I'm going to adapt it too, because this is a really big ask for both these quarterbacks in this game.
Yeah. Just playing the odds.
Yeah. Playing the odds here a little bit. I'm hopeful that by the end of the weekend, we're talking about both of them as top 15 picks in like mock drafts that we're doing, or that we start to see them popping up around, because I think the process for both these guys and what we've seen so far has been so good, but they've been pretty unchallenged.
I mean, if you watch the mock draft episode that we just put out, I kept forcing Ty Simpson into the conversation.
Yeah, and I think the Wisconsin tape's as good as it gets.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm my hands on the button, but I'm going to daft it. My hands on the big red button, but I'm going to daft it. All right, two more to go, and this one's a 2027 NFL draft one. Very, very interested, and I actually love the question as well. Dafter draft, James, and this is one that you created here. Auburn wide receiver Cam Coleman will be a top two receiver off the board in the 2027 NFL draft. Can I go first on this one since you created it?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm drafting this because I think I've been about this for a while. And I think this has more to do that, like, I'm not a Ryan Williams hater. But like, yeah. I watch Ryan Williams and I don't come away like overly impressed or think that he's an overly dominant wide receiver.
Right.
Like, like his talent is in the elite/range, like rare range. I mean, if we're talking about true sophomore wide receivers, I might even throw a third name ahead of Ryan Williams right now. And that's Mario Craver. I might throw Mario Craver ahead of him too in this conversation. When I watch Ryan Williams, I see a receiver that gets escorted to the boundary pretty frequently when he's forced to press man. He's got big time drop issues. Again, he does have the rare movement skills, and he's a really good athlete. And I think the body control is really good. But like, I've been burned on receivers who can't play through contact, and Ryan Williams cannot play through contact right now at all. And again, the drop issues are really present. So I am going to draft this because, again, Cam Coleman's special. I think Cam Coleman's really special. He's not Jeremiah Smith, obviously, but Jeremiah Smith has been the best wide receiver in the country since he stepped foot on a football field at the college level. So, again, he's not Jeremiah Smith, but yeah, Cam Coleman, I'm all about him. His ability to levitate in the air, go up and get it, while also having the immense body control around the boundary to just glide, it feels like, or float and get a foot in bounds. It's
The stride length.
Stride length is outrageous. I feel the same way about Craver with the stride length too, even though he's only like 5'9". His stride length is ridiculous. But yeah, I'm all about this Cam Coleman conversation about him being a top two wide receiver in 2027.
Yeah. I mean, you kind of echoed my thoughts of like why I came up with that. I'm just, when I hear people say Jeremiah Smith and Ryan Williams, that seems like a pairing that doesn't really line up with the tape. Like to me, Jeremiah Smith and Cam Coleman, that makes sense. It's like, oh yeah, two big alpha receivers, like top five picks. Ryan Williams is to me maybe like a top 25 pick and a really, I think he can be a really good separator, but playing through contact and then the drop issues, like you said, are, you know, two persistent issues. And again, we're talking about somebody being the fourth or fifth best receiver in college football instead of like the second. So it's not right. Like, it's not like we're saying he sucks or something.
Right. Exactly. I think that's really well said. I'm glad I got to throw Mario Craver in this topic as well, because that dude is something else too. But all dudes we don't have to talk about for another year, which is,
yep,
sucks because they're all really electric. But all right, final daft or draft here. And again, this one's another one that you came up with. Excluding quarterbacks in the 2026 NFL draft, the top four players selected will be some order of Reuben Bain, Peter Woods, Jordan Tyson, and Keldrick Falk.
Do you want to go first? Because this is mine.
Sure. Oh, man. I am skeptical about four defensive linemen flying in one wide, or three defensive linemen, one wide receiver, mm-hmm, flying off the board like that. I'm interested in what Jordan Tyson's medicals are going to come back as. So that could be a potential wild card here. Now, we talk so much about how much of a premium offensive tackles are, for me to think that Spencer Fano won't be in that conversation as well. Oh, boy. I just raised a lot of concerns, so I think that means I'm going to daft it. I think that we are going to see some team take an offensive tackle. I think we're going to see some team take an offensive tackle higher than that, than we expect, even if the tackle class is kind of on the decline, it feels like.
Right.
But I think Fano's going to test out of his mind as well.
Fano's going to look insane on the wave drill.
He is. He very much is. There's not a defensive back that at this point that I think would really threaten this conversation. And there's not a linebacker that would threaten this conversation. There's not a running back that would threaten this conversation.
Well, Jermond McCoy is returning Arkansas week.
Okay. Excellent news. Who's been the highest drafted corner in recent years? I should know the answer to this
Jeff
question.
Jeff Okuda went 3.
Right.
Devin Witherspoon went like what? 7? 5?
5.
5?
Yeah.
Jamal Adams went...
Safety, he went 5. I don't see that kind of that. I don't see that happening. Sauce Gardner went, Stingley went 3. Stingley and Gardner went 3-4.
Yep.
In 22. Yeah, I don't see that happening this year. So I'm going to daft it mainly because I think Fano, somebody's going to draft Fano ridiculously high. Again, yeah, because there aren't 64 good offensive tackles in the NFL, and every team, like, there needs to be 64 offensive tackles bare minimum at the NFL level. And they're just, there's a massive supply and demand issue at offensive tackle right now at the NFL level. So I think somebody's going to take Fano outrageously high.
Yeah. Fano. I mean, I still think potentially Trevor Goosby, like depending on how he looks in SEC play. Jermond McCoy coming back from injury, and then Jordan Tyson's potential injury concerns. Those are probably enough to kick it down. I would also say, like, as much as I would be against it, there might be some, there's a lot of people seem to love the idea of Caleb Downs top 5. So maybe one of that is a GM and you know, they take Caleb Downs top five. But
yeah, it's been almost a decade since we saw a safety go top 10, though.
I don't buy it personally, but there's a chance.
Jamal Adams 2017 was the last safety to go top 10. So, I mean, who's been the highest drafted safety since? Kyle Hamilton.
Kyle Hamilton.
And I thought Kyle Hamilton was the best player in this draft.
Right.
He went 12th overall.
Kyle Hamilton, Derwin James, Malachi Starks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so, I like all three of them better than Caleb Downs, personally.
Damn. Yeah. So, I don't buy the Downs thing. Top five either. I will draft it, though. I'm going to stick with my draft for the Fano thing, though. I think that's going to happen.
Yeah.
But. All right, James.
All right.
What are the thoughts that are in your head right now after having these conversations?
Oh, man.
Six questions there.
You know, I'm excited for tomorrow's episode, breaking down this week's slate.
Mm-hmm.
I was getting my steps in today and I was planning, like, how on earth am I going to watch all of these games on Saturday? How am I going to manage this logistically? Because, you know, I'm an Indiana fan. We got the IU shirt on right here. So I got to watch Indiana, Iowa, but I'm also kind of a UT fan because I went there for a couple years. So I always watch UT, Tennessee. Got to watch them against Mississippi State. Then the 6:30 window, we've got Alabama, Georgia, and Oregon, Penn State at the same time. Wish they would have put one of those on at 11:30, maybe. But
yeah, I'm really overwhelmed looking at my whiteboard of all of the quarterbacks I've already listed out that I have to chart after this weekend.
Oh yeah,
16. So I have already prioritized them. So I might kick some young guys or some guys that I don't really see as legitimate NFL draft prospects down the road here and get the big ones out of the way. Might cut that list in half. We'll see. But yeah, we got a lot of head-to-heads to talk about tomorrow. We've got some emerging players to talk about. It'll be a good one. Ohio State, Washington, I'm just going to throw this one out here because I have it written on my whiteboard because I'm going to do a film room on it next week. Denzel Boston and versus Jermaine Matthews might be my favorite head-to-head this weekend as well. Two like young players with like quite a bit of draft stock on the line in this one. So,
And the first real test for both of them.
Yeah. Right?
Yeah.
Well,
Jermaine Matthews had Texas. Yeah. Which I don't even consider Arch. I feel like, Western Michigan's quarterback gives you a better challenge than Arch did in week one, but yeah.
Yeah. That's
still technically a challenge.
Yeah. All right, James. Well, we will chop it all up tomorrow. Until next time, this has been another episode of the Daft on Draft podcast. See ya.